Good morning, folks. This is John Lair and the Renfro Valley folks greeting you again after a long week of waiting. Glad to have listening friends with us by radio, in addition to those who are here with us in person this morning in the big old barn in Renfro Valley, Kentucky. A barn which was last night the scene of our regular Saturday night country music stage show, just as it has been every Saturday night for more than 25 years. Many of those who attend this show stay over to be with us on Sunday morning, as folks have this morning, to join us at the Renfro Valley Gathering. Beautiful fall weather still holding on in Renfro Valley, but we can't reasonably expect it to last much longer, so let's enjoy it while we can. And let's enjoy now singing our opening hymn with Miss Bess starting us off with a chord on the old parlor organ. It's Beulah Land. Let's everybody sing it. Through patching roofs and cleaning out furnaces and getting them ready for the winter months soon to be upon us, we're ready to start on another heating unit for the big barn here. Slowly, and we hope surely, we're working toward being able to comfortably heat every inch of this big old building. We started out with the biggest auditorium type heater we could find. Last year, we put in a plastic ceiling to cut off all that open space under the high rafters. And this year, we're adding another heating unit at the other end of the barn. And Monday morning, we start on the tall chimney, our flue, that will be required for its installation, which we want to complete by the last of the month to be ready for this year's tobacco festival, annually held in the barn, because it's the biggest building available for it. Now, with the work necessary in remodeling the old original country store to house our new vocational training school, looks like our local work crew is going to be pretty busy from now till the snow flies. Another pretty busy place right now is the Bugle mailing office, where we're trying to finish mailing this month's copies of the Renfro Valley Bugle. We hope one of them is coming to you. And if it isn't, you can mighty easy remedy the situation by sending in a subscription to the Renfro Valley Bugle, Renfro Valley, Kentucky. And now the Farmer Sisters to sing for us.
dreams come true. There'll be no sorrow beyond tomorrow, for Christ will be with me throughout eternity.
Birthday list represents an all-time low, I believe. I can't recall a time when fewer were reported. Oldest is the 98th birthday of Mrs. Hetty Bishop of Tulsa, Oklahoma. Ms. A.B. Parkinson, Coffeyville, Kansas, is 94. George A. Murray, Louisville, Kentucky, 94. Mrs. Sarah Louise Kelly, Tampa, Florida, 97. Ms. Joshua Patterson, Huntington, West Virginia, 90. And a gentleman at Holt, Michigan, his name was not given, though, is 96. Wedding anniversaries are a bit more numerous, most of it seems in the 60s. Mrs. and Ms. Walter Heathman of Alkemas, Michigan, have been married 60 years. As reported by their children, Mr. and Ms. August Cedar of Troy, Kansas, are celebrating their 60th anniversary. Mr. and Ms. Boyd Jordan of Orlando, Florida, have been married 60 years. As reported by Mr. and Ms. Clarence Nelson and family of Dallas, South Dakota, who say they listen to The Gathering every Sunday morning. And Mr. and Mrs. John Nope of Romulus, Michigan, have also been married 60 years. Mr. and Ms. Arthur Mueller of Delphos, Ohio, 55. Mr. and Ms. L.B. King of Jackson, Michigan, 57. Mr. and Ms. Fred Haynes of Owensboro, Kentucky, 52. Mr. and Ms. Hubert Longmire, Austin, Texas, 55. Mr. and Ms. Rudolph Blicker, St. Paul, Minnesota, 57. Mr. and Ms. Thompson Cartwright, New Orleans, Louisiana, 52. And our four selected golden wedding anniversaries this morning are from four different states. First, they are Mr. and Ms. J. O'Connor of Dearborn Heights, Michigan. Then from Oskaloosa, Kansas, we have the names of Mr. and Ms. George Fowler. And from Wilson, Wisconsin, we're informed that Hammond, Wisconsin, is the address of Mr. and Ms. John R. Peterson. And Squab Creek, Kentucky, we get the names of Mr. and Ms. Anse Barger. We also want to acknowledge a few announcements of late family reunions that reaches too late to mention in advance of the date. Again, we call attention to the fact that all announcements should be in 3 weeks ahead of the date for which you request them. Quite often we get letters from folks, mostly in some of the eastern cities, asking about the Kentucky feuds they've heard so much about and are curious to know more about. Well, of course, the major feuds involving hundreds of people in all walks of life are now a thing of the past year, but as time goes on and passing years lend them romantic interest, they linger in people's minds to become a part of American tradition. But certainly there was nothing romantic about the old feuds. They were mostly sordid wholesale killings. In many cases, instigated and supported by people who use them for personal and political gains, but the feudists themselves, the mountaineers, the actual trigger men of the opposing forces, looked on it as a fight for survival. If a man was killed, it was the duty of some of his folks to be revenged on the killer's folks, down to the third or fourth generation. Most of the Kentucky Mountain feuds really had their beginning in the aftermath of the war between the states, and mostly from the action of home guards and guerrilla bands who prowled through the hills killing and stealing and burning in the name of one side or the other. Soldiers of the North and the South who met as strangers on the battlefield had no more interest in each other after peace was declared, the treaty signed, and everybody went home. But here in the Kentucky Mountains, it wasn't like that. Neighbors had engaged in a bloody war, family against family, and for them the war would not be over until one side or the other was wiped out. And they were right here to remind each other of old scores yet to be settled. They were by no means all confined within the state lines, though. The most publicized, therefore best known and longest remembered, was between the McCoys of Kentucky and the Hatfields of West Virginia, with the Old Tug River as the dividing line which both sides crossed and recrossed in carrying on their bloody vendetta. The Old Tug River, which now flows so peacefully between two good neighbor states.
All down the valley, fair and green, the Old Tug River rolls. If it could tell of the sights it seems, would make your blood run cold. To hear how McCoy and Hatfield claim of the states which it divides. Killed her with bloody hands that stained its crystal tide. But down the Old Tug River now the Hatfields gather no more. Since the avalanche has been laid to rest on the West Virginia shore, while over on the Kentucky side, old Randall and all of his boys asleep in the valley no more. The one Kentucky McCoy. Devil as was the Hatfield chief, a strong and warlike man. Randall, he was the only coon of all McCoy clan. Both were cunning and both were brave, and the hands of both were red. But both escaped the murderous grave and died in a peaceful bed. But down the Old Tug River now the Hatfields gather no more. Since the avalanche has been laid to rest on the West Virginia shore, while over on the Kentucky side, old Randall and all of his boys asleep in the valley no more.
And that's part of an old song too long to be given here in full. Now, what's generally considered the four major Kentucky feuds, in addition to the Hatfield-McCoys, I guess were the Strong Amos, the Tolliver-Martin, and the Hargis-Callahan-Baker feuds. Just as colorful, although less known, were the many smaller feuds in many areas of the mountain hinterland. We had them all around us down here even, mostly before my day, but remembered by many older men that I talked with. After I got back from World War I, we were, for a few weeks, caught up in the middle of one of these major feuds when a trial for murder was transferred from one of the mountain counties to our county seat. I was operating a restaurant, a small hotel in the county seat town across from the main hotel. One faction stayed with me. The other, more numerous group, put up in the bigger hotel. Day and night, all during the weeks of the trial, armed men sat at the windows of the two hotels, facing each other across the dirt road between them, ready to go into action at the first suspicious move. The tenacity of the feud idea is well exemplified by the fact that one of the boys who stayed with me was a witness against the young man who had shot his father on his father's first visit back to the mountains in many years. The killer was a grandson of a man who had been killed years before. He'd never before seen his victim until he came back to the hills. The son of the victim, the witness just referred to, a college graduate and a successful businessman in the city to which his father had moved his family years before, was himself shot down from ambush soon after the trial. But one of the most remarkable men I've ever known, himself for years a feudist, told me the feuds more about him than anybody else. He was John Wright, sometimes peace officer and sometimes bounty hunter, sometimes Kentucky Mountain Klansman. A local song about him gives you something of a picture of him.
In the wild Kentucky Mountains near the old Virginia line, lived bad John Wright, the bravest man of all those troubled times. And the mountain folks will tell you around their cabin door how he freed the land from a robber band with his smoking 44. The hills were full of outlaws who'd plunder, steal, and kill. The governor sent for Bad John Wright to drive them from the hills. And when he was commissioned, he raised his hand and swore to free the land from the outlaw band with a smoking 44. John Wright took up his pistol and strapped it to his thigh. He sent the outlaw leaders word to leave the land or die. But they did not heed this warning, and 23 lay dead before the other realized John Wright meant what he said. Then the gang broke up and scattered to throw him off the track. One by one they slipped away, and one by one came back. Head down across the saddle, all dark and stained with gore. They couldn't quite beat Bad John Wright with a smoking 44. John Wright has followed his last trail into a land afar. And to the great high sheriff he has handed in his star. But still his restless spirit roams the hills and valleys o'er, where he ruled the land with an iron hand and a smoking 44.
I'd heard of the exploits of John Wright all my life, but I first met him after he was well past 80, but still very active and clear-headed. In spite of his many hair-raising adventures in the days when he was the undisputed head of the Wright clan, he was a very gentlemanly, mild-mannered old man, very reluctant at first to talk about his colorful past. The then sheriff of Letcher County, Kentucky, said that so potent was the name of John Wright among evildoers that when there was some tough character back in the hills, it was very dangerous to go after. All he would do was turn his name over to Uncle John, who merely sent the desperado a postcard, told him to come in and give up, or he himself would come after him, and it always worked. Much of legend, of course, is mingled with fact, but a local newspaper announcing his death some years ago mentioned that he was reported to have killed 23 men. The article went on to say that his estate would be divided among 22 children. So in a long lifetime, he almost evened the score. So far as I was able to learn, the men he actually killed were slain in resisting arrest. During most of his lifetime, there was no organized law in his section of the mountains. When any man or set of men got too bad, the governor of the state offered a reward for him, and Bad John Wright took the trail. Wright, incidentally, was the man who gave John Fox, Jr. the facts on which Fox wrote The Trail of the Lonesome Pine, and was himself one of the characters in the book. We'll have to give you the story in the pages of the Bugle sometimes. It's much too long to be told in here. One of his sons has written something of a book on it. We have other facts to add to it. Makes it rather interesting, I think. Now, those are the old-time feuds. We have some synthetic songs of feuds. I suppose that this is one. This was of a later origin, I know. It's about a Zeb Turney. I don't know whether it's a Turney feud or not, but this is Zeb Turney's gal. You've heard it before. You'll hear it again now as the farmer sings it.
Swore since the day he was born to keep.
paper some morning and read an editorial, that is, if you read editorials, and one that has a familiar ring, you check and see if it isn't the one you read in the September issue of the Renfro Valley Bugle. An amazing number of papers around the country have written in to ask permission to reprint this editorial, and the purpose in bringing it up at this time is to say that any publication wanting to reprint it has my permission to do so. It won't be necessary to write in and ask for such permission at all. Now, of course, we would appreciate the usual courtesy of giving the Renfro Valley Bugle credit for it whenever it is reprinted. While we're on the subject of reprints, also, according to some of our readers, information is furnished in the gun value column in the Bugle is sometimes used in other publications. Well, that's all right, too, because the wider distribution such information gets, the more people it will benefit. As we told you, that column is for the benefit of folks who have old firearms around the house, don't know the value of them. Maybe they want to sell them, don't know whether a dealer's trying to cheat them or offering them a fair price. Now, we've got nothing against the gun dealers. Most of them we've ever known have been pretty high-class, honest men, and most of them will offer a fair price for your heirloom guns. But folks feel a lot better about it if they know whether it's a fair price or not. Now, this we attempt to help you to decide in the letters and answers we print in gun values in the Renfro Valley Bugle. And another thing, we don't, unless actually requested to do so by the writer, print the names and addresses of folks writing in with questions. Now, that's to keep them from being bothered with unscrupulous buyers who might think that because they're writing in for information, they don't know much about firearms and would be easy to trade with. Then, too, many of the writers have no intention of selling an antique firearm that's been in the family for years. They don't want to be pestered with offers. They just want to know how much it's worth. No charge for this service, of course. It's just another way of trying to help through the columns of our little old country newspaper, folks who want certain information and don't know where else to look for it. Special request number for this morning, Did You Ever Go Sailing, was asked for the patients of Wayne County Hospital at Eloise, Michigan. Russ and Joe Fisher to sing it.
There's an old ramshackle shack where in dreams I wander back and listen to those southern melodies. Was the place where I was born on a bright October morn, and it's nestled at the end of my river of memory. Did you ever go sailing down the river of memory to a little log cabin that is nestled among the sycamore trees, where the sunshine is cheery and nothing in the world grows dreary? That's my cabin at the end of my river of memory. The end of memory's way, I will meet her there tonight among the trees. With a smile of welcome she so sweetly beckons me to that cabin at the end of my river of memory. Did you ever go sailing down the river of memory to a little log cabin that is nestled among the sycamore trees, where the sunshine is cheery and nothing in the world grows weary? That's my cabin at the end of my river of memory. When the twilight shadows fall, many childhood voices call me back again to days that used to be. And in answer to their prayer, I will soon be sailing there to that cabin at the end of my river of memory. Did you ever go sailing down the river of memory to a little log cabin that is nestled among the sycamore trees, where the sunshine is cheery and nothing in the world grows dreary? That's my cabin at the end of my river of memory.
Visitors from a distance this morning include Mr. and Ms. Roy Ray of Canyon City, Colorado, Mr. and Ms. A.G. Rose, Alice Johnson of Tulsa, Oklahoma, Mr. and Ms. Lawrence Larson, Ms. Ida Rusley of Minneapolis, Minnesota, Glenn Anderson, a party of four from Beaver, Pennsylvania, J.H. Flowers and a party of Gardendale, Alabama. Now for a closing hymn, Miss Bess, Further Along. Us again next Sunday for another Renfro Valley Gathering.